Okay, let's get started. Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our Sunrise Project weekly call, where we're here together in a safe space filled with love and compassion and our mutual desire to heal and heal ourselves and our families. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And this is our first day of June, and we are here and happy to be here, happy to be alive and on this call and sitting up straight and really in a space of gratitude for this first day of June that the Lord has made. And we have our monthly open session with our fantastic Dr. Linda McGee, who is our resident expert and clinical psychologist, attorney, nationally recognized mental health expert, speaker, et cetera, et cetera. Many of you who are here know Dr. Linda McGee. In fact, everybody, I recognize all of your names this morning. So I'm not going to read through the huge, incredible bio, but I will just say
No, don't.
that, okay, Dr. Linda is a visiting faculty at George Washington University and the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. And most importantly, as I mentioned earlier, she is a dear friend to the Sunrise Project, to me, to all of us here. And she has been here since the very beginning in 2020. She was our very first
Oh,
speaker
my.
guest. Yes, 2020, May of 20, March of 2020. So I appreciate you, Dr. Linda. And our intention for this morning is really to have an open session. We want to talk about, we have a topic, we want to talk about PTSD. Yes. If anybody's going through anything, please feel free to share and open and just come off of mute. Some people came off camera, on camera last week. So we welcome that as well. But I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Linda. It's an open first Sunday session. And I'm happy to have you here, Dr. Linda. Thank you for being here this morning.
Good morning, everybody. I'm so happy to also recognize a lot of the names and faces on the call this morning. And just to say the mic is open, I'm going to start off by asking everyone, what kind of week did you have? And because Kelly was talking about PTSD, to talk a little bit about what that is. Right. What trauma is. And Kelly, I'm glad that you reminded me to, one of the things that I'm trying to do now is make some of these terms that we just toss about. I want to make sure that people are all on the same page. So a trauma is something that you go through, and it's typically bad, right? It's an event that causes harm to you, either physically, mentally, psychologically, spiritually. And what happens is post-traumatic stress is that when you've gone through trauma, you tend to experience it or re-experience it later. And so we use the word PTSD, but it's actually a medical term. So what I like to say sometimes is that you're re-experiencing the trauma or you're experiencing the trauma. Because post-traumatic stress syndrome comes from a particularly military experiencing of trauma, and that's what's the sort of the basis of the diagnostic definition. But there are different kinds of traumas, including racial trauma, trauma of growing up, and some of you might have heard, Kelly, have you heard of the ACEs?
Yes, of course.
Yes, the adverse childhood experiences. That's one way that we gauge whether or not you have something called a developmental trauma. Does something happen when you're young that influences your outcomes when you are grown? Was your mother sick? Did your mother pass away? Did your parents, something happen to your parents and grandparents? Did they experience significant illnesses? Did you have caretaking d duties? Did you something happen to you? So we're trying to like flesh out like what is trauma, what is a post-traumatic stress disorder, and what is post-traumatic is sometimes, for example, if something happened to you, you were attacked, and then something comes on TV that sort of takes you back to where the day that it happened to you originally.
Yes.
So we re-experience trauma in those kinds of real concrete ways, but we also experience them psychologically. So, for example, if you didn't have a very affectionate mother, right? For example, and you experience people in a way that's withholding. If they do anything that's kind of triggers that sort of need in you to have an affectionate spouse or affectionate children or even affectionate coworkers, but you have that need in you. And so you experience the world differently because of that need and because you lack that affection when you were growing up. Does that make sense, everybody? I was
Absolutely.
trying, I, I'm, yes.
And I think there was somebody last week that spoke about, I think as a good example, about being in an abusive domestic violence situation. And so seeing what we all saw last summer, and I'm not going to comment on the case or anything, but seeing what we saw with Cassie and Diddy, triggered many of us. And with that, because I know for me, it brought back memories of high school and what that felt like. And so I think that's an example of that. That again,
And
somebody
sometimes
mentioned
even if
that.
you didn't experience it, it doesn't, like when I see women being hurt, that just triggers something in me, right? And I'm aware of that, even if that thing didn't never happen to me personally. So Kelly, can we talk a little bit about our children, and I can ask you how you're doing, and
Sure, I'm happy to open up always. So let's see, boys are both fine. I very much have pray be pray I pray for them both. Kyle this morning, I'm having an interesting morning, and he called this morning around 8 o'clock Eastern, and it was a really difficult conversation, and he's in Colorado. And he did not sound well and really inebriated and maybe high. And I don't know exactly what was happening. But what I do know is he was talking about wanting to be in this AI space. And really, he had developed this AI tool and this app. And, AI is taking over the world and robots and all these things, which is true, like very true, very smart statements. The challenge came in for me where every other month it's something different. I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to be a rapper. I'm going to go do technology. I'm going to do, it's this grasping and wanting for the quick $1 million check. And it was like, well, you and dad know everybody. And so, what would you do? Who could you introduce me to so I can, be a part of this AI game? And what would you do? So I walked him through what I would do. I would do research and analysis. I'd really understand the industry because I don't know anything about the industry. And it's changing so rapidly. And I would reach out to this brother named Cliff Worley, who I saw do a presentation. It was one of the best presentations I've ever seen. This brother from the West Coast, he's an AI specialist. I said, Kyle, he wears cornrows. He looks like you. He's young, and he did a really incredible presentation about AI. I'd be happy to find his information and connect you and talk to him, but study his company, study all the things he's done because he's an expert in the space. And he said, I know as much as him. And so I said, so the challenge is, and it just went down the path where I just really said, let me just listen. And it was like these delusions of grandeur and this disconnection with reality. And so at some point, I just said, I'm happy to support your dreams. I really want to support your dreams. I also need you to show like people in that space. And he said, I don't want to have a boss. I want to be like you, Mom. I want to be an entrepreneur. And I said, you always have a boss. Your clients are your boss. If you're in a company and you're the CEO, your board is your boss. So I tried to explain all that too. I said, it is much harder being an entrepreneur than it is to have a job. That's my personal perspective. And it also needs to show work
Your
ethic,
bills are your boss.
right? And you have payroll, and you have to make payroll every 2 weeks and all.
Yeah.
So, but beyond that, you need to show work ethic. And I said, so we went down this path, and then they started lying about some things, which I had a hard time with. So I had a difficult conversation this morning where I want so badly for him to be self-sufficient and to make logical sense and be clean, you know? And it's like, yes. And he's so flipping smart.
Right.
So that's where I am. I'm in a space of like, gosh, I really, you know, a little sad maybe.
Right. And it also feels like you're in this kind of a sad loop with him, right? And so I have someone has their hands up, but I'm gonna call on you in a second, but I just wanna like make a couple of points. One is that these, what you call delusions of grandeur, are really common with young people and people generally who've gotten kind of off track, right? So he sees our DMV area, his DMV area peers, and they have now graduated or about to graduate from college, right, Kelly? So he sees them progressing. He sees them getting jobs. He sees them becoming more independent and living on their own. And he continues to more sort of assuage his needs with substances. And that often helps to further remove people from the realm of reality. And so when we say delusions, what they start off with is a wish, right? The wish to do better. And then somehow that morphs into I have to believe that I'm a master of the universe and everybody else is standing in my way, right? And so that's the origins of delusions. And of course, it's combined with people not getting mental health treatment, starting off with depression. And that sort of putting it out there. So when you see somebody that's saying that I'm good at everything, I already know this, that's usually coming from a place of deep, deep self-loathing, deep, deep self-esteem deficits, deep, deep confidence deficits, and they don't trust people that are trying to give them reality. And so that's one thing I just want to make clear because I'm sure half the people on this phone call have gone through something like that where their kid just says something and you're thinking like, do they really think that they're very convincing and they themselves believe that. The second thing is that we have this kind of learned helplessness,
That's
right?
right.
He wants you to make it happen for him.
That's right.
Right. And I'm going to make this statement. This is something that I'm working through as an older adult, is that he wants the result
Without
without the
the work.
process.
Without the work.
Yeah, without the process. And the process is for whatever it is we're all trying to do out there. I'm working on some things myself, Kelly, and I'm hoping that my child works on some things, but it's like you have to get up at 7:15 and you have to start making this stuff happen, right? Like for me now it's steps, right? So I have to get these steps going if I'm going to meet my goal. I can't sit and scroll on Twitter. I can't get high. I can't do, whatever it is that I want to be doing. Eat bonbons, whatever. So he there's a process for all of these things that he wants, right? He could go like he
So
could
how
go to
do you get the, so I know what he I yes, and I'm sorry to cut you off. I guess the
No,
what I
no, no, no.
have,
We're good.
what is the thank you for letting me do that. What is so what do you recommend? Because I said if
Yeah,
heaven
I,
is
okay,
denied,
so
I said how I have to go.
I was kind of building to that
I'm
because I
sorry.
wanted to talk about him first
Yes.
and
Okay,
then
go
you.
ahead. Go
Okay,
ahead.
so I'm ready now to turn to that.
Okay.
Your issue is that you're his mother and you want the best for him. And he knows how to pull you into that cycle, right?
Yes.
Y'all in a cycle, he gets a new scheme to get
Every
rich
2 months.
to be
That's it.
successful.
It's a scheme to get rich every 2 months.
And to get respect and to get paid. And so a lot of the things that he chooses are things that are the kind of masters of the universe. Like in many ways, rappers and producers are masters of the universe. The tech people are masters of the universe, right? So he wants this so badly that he pulls you into this thing of, well, mom, make it happen, right? And because you want him to not be this person who is 20 something years old now, you sometimes give into that, right? You don't just listen to him, you try to help him in other ways. But he's not ready for that because he's trying to hurdle over his mental health problems and substance problems, and also this learned helplessness, right? Where he's completely dependent on you in many ways, but then resentful of you. So what you're doing now is that you're trying to remove yourself from the pattern. So that your equilibrium is this pattern, right? So what is your guys's pattern is this, right? You get into these debates and sometimes you give him a nudge and introduce him to somebody, but you've stopped doing that. So you're disturbing the equilibrium, okay? And you're trying to establish a healthier equilibrium for you. And honestly, you're helping him by not colluding with this fantasy that if you introduce him to the right person, he'll even know what to do when he gets there because he doesn't have the foundation. So you're actually setting him up for failure, right? If you introduce him to that person, he's not ready for that. He's not, you know, so you're stepping out of the collusion and you're doing the absolute right thing. Right. And so you should, even though it's messy, and even though I know just by looking at you, because I've known you forever, that is stirring up some stuff in you. So to have to say, yeah, you know, I believe in your dreams, but I'm not trying to introduce you to anyone until you deal with some of the other issues, as hard as that is the thing that you're supposed to be doing right now. Right. It's just painful. I mean, in our pre-talk, I'm not disclosing what any of the three of us said, maybe between me, you, and D, is that the theme of our little pre-talk this morning was when moms' hearts are broken because our kids are not doing well, or our kids are shorted in society, or our kids are not thriving, and there's no end in sight, right? I kind of want to just sit with that with you, Kelly, that even though you changed your game and you're dealing with him in a more effective way in terms of his mental health and frankly your mental health, it's not to say that this is not painful.
Right. And people are saying that, I mean, many of us are dealing with the same thing with the adult children that have these. You know, these ideas, these lofty ideas, which are absolutely possible. If, to your point, I didn't even address that this morning because I decided not to go down the path of saying, I really want you to get clean. Because at the same time, he kept saying, I really value your opinion, mom. And I know the story and I know all the jobs you've worked. And, you know, so he was in a space of really wanting to maybe someone to listen or maybe just
Well, I mean,
get
he knows
advice.
you're the person that he per conversely upholds the most. He sees your hustle. He sees you come out of Cleveland. He's seen what you've done since you came out of Cleveland, the hustle, the grind. The creativity, the perseverance, the toughness, the love, and the joy. He sees that his mother is someone objectively out there in the world who could help him, right? Who's doing quite well by any objective means. I mean, he doesn't, he can compare reality to what you're experiencing, and he knows that you're the kind of mom that a lot of people would love to have. Right? A mom who's compassionate and will use her connections for you for the good, right? And not just because because you are, or because he's your child. So he sees that you're someone to look up to, but by the same token, you're also the object of his resentments because you're the only person or the only small group of people that will even listen to him or even take what he's saying seriously. And also, he's stuck. I mean, to be really honest with you, right? He's just stuck. And he's in his own loop, right? It's like, if I just hit it here, he'll work his jobs. He's trying, but it's not enough. So then he shoots for the big star, right? If I could just get to that big star, then I would be okay. But how he gets to that big star is that he gets up in the morning, and just like what I started this discussion about, you set your alarm and you walk over to the community college, right? You take a training course or any of the other opportunities that are in front of him to do something constructive, right? I
That's
had a kid the other day that signed up for a construction management course at the community college, right? And so he's now employed on a construction site. This is the first time in 3 or 4 years that he had a non-fast food opportunity, right? And
awesome.
he
Good for him.
finally did it. Right. It was many years of me and his mother telling him to do it, but he finally decided to do it. And the last thing I want to say to you, Kelly, I know we're taking up a lot of time with you, but I really feel like there's because of based on the comments, there's a lot of women and people that are going through this same situation. This is not easy. No, there's no books that tell you what to do when your 20-something-year-old child is lost. And there's no feeling like a mother's feeling when you go somewhere and you see another 20-something-year-old boy that's thriving, and you're like, well, what the hell did I do? Right? What didn't I do? Right? And you say, and you're wishing the child well, but you're like, why can't my child do that? I mean,
It's just real facts.
this is real. And it's I can see it's getting to the people on the line, but it's getting to me too. Because someone in the comments says, how, a mother's broken heart. That's something that it's big.
It gets easier when you don't experience it every day. And so Kyle living in Colorado has helped. But the phone
I
call
mean,
this morning was like, whoosh. And
You talked to me a couple of years ago, and you were very sure that you and Kyle needed to live in other places from each other.
And so it's better that way.
And I think that he needed it too.
There's a great comment I want to comment on. Dr.
Okay,
Vicky
please.
wrote Dr. Vicky wrote there's a lot, but the first one was,
My goodness,
how do we
yes.
break the cycle as parents? I feel like my trauma caused me to overdo it, which has created other issues.
Right. Overcompensation with our people is very common, right? We're parenting, and I'm saying I mean we. We are parenting from the position of fear because of our own racial trauma, our own experience of trauma, our trauma as women, our trauma as Black men. We're always parenting from, let me guard against this. Right. I don't want my son to be a statistic. I want him to graduate from high school. I want him to graduate from college. And so we have to understand that a lot of times we overcompensate. A lot of times we don't want to see problems because that just makes us more fearful. Right. So, Kelly and I've had this conversation over and over again about, okay, but this is not his trajectory. So, like, we have to focus on what his trajectory is. How do you break the cycle? It's hard, but what Kelly is ta was talking about today is a perfect illustration. She did not get into his delusion, right? And we called it cuckoo earlier. I'm not gonna lie to y'all.
It's like
And then, it's probably not a
cuckoo
term.
thought all morning.
It's not a psychology term, so I wouldn't use it often, but I'm going to use it today. She elected to not step into that today. And so one of the things you could do if you've been overcompensating, you cannot change what happened from this moment and prior. You cannot change that. But what you can do is you can stop overcompensating. And you can transition the child away from overcompensating. You can sit down and talk to him and say, look, I've done this in the past, and I don't necessarily think it has helped you, right? And so I'm gonna stop doing it, but I may not stop doing whatever it is, but giving you money or whatever it is on a dime. But 2025 is a year that we're going to wean off of it. And so by January 1 of 2026, we need another plan, right? I can't make you go to therapy, but I'm gonna stop calling your boss. I have people that call in universities, stepping in with employers, placing them into job after job after job, right? And ruining your own good name while doing it. Okay, am I somebody on the line? Does that have to impact somebody on the line here? You're ruining your own good name by putting your and you're setting your child up for failure, right? Because they haven't dealt with their mental health or substance abuse issues. And so when you put them on that job, someone was like, well, I called the boss at Morgan Stanley, right? And I'm like, that is not in the long run going to help your child. So you can stop overcompensating. And the last thing I want to say about Vicky's comment is that you can stop beating yourself up, right? You
That
can
part.
forgive yourself for overcompensating while admitting that you are. I'm not saying you're sweeping anything under the rug, you're looking at things realistically, but you can forgive yourself out of the name of you love your child. But some of us collude too long with our own children, and we're not making them better by colluding with them, by agree, like tacitly agreeing to the fact that they're fantasizing, right? So when you're stepping into that, you're stepping into the cuckoo, right? By saying, oh yeah, you can do all those things even though you only read a one book and looked at one YouTube. You can go have a conversation with someone who's lived that life for years and years and years. It would be like you saying to me, well, your child saying to me, well, Dr. McGee, I give a friend advice, so I feel like I'm on your footing. Well, you're not doing your child any favors by placing them into this situation, because I, as a psychologist, might have love and compassion for them, but a lot of people are not. And that also, Kelly and D, takes us back to our prior conversation. The world is not so compassionate toward our children. And we have to do the best we can to work on ourselves so that we can help them navigate. There's a couple of questions on here. Some good news, right? Oh my goodness, I think that was one of the, her son recently admitted to the Morehouse Online College, finally finished his degree. Oh my goodness, thank you so much for that good news. I think I was one of the people that mentioned it. There might have been others, so I don't mention it to
That's
take credit, but
awesome.
I will say congratulations. Tiny baby steps, y'all. This is not the movie of the week where you go from one scene where the child is not doing well to the next scene where they're doing perfectly. It's tiny baby steps. And I want to shout out Morehouse for finally agreeing to go online. Because they wouldn't for a long time. But that is such good news. And thank you for bringing it, because I think we needed to hear it today. And okay, so there's another comment. There are grown men who go through life like this. It's a lot to deal with their need for external validation and need to be placed on a pedestal. It will always be something. Yes. If you are, because of racial trauma, because of how the world treats you, because of a prior abuse, because of your relationship with your parents, if you need validation to feel whole and you're relying on external factors, that is a huge issue, particularly in the Black community. Because here's the thing, you're not going to always get that external validation from the world and how they're treating us now, particularly in this political environment. Right. So it's never going to be enough. So you can go out there and you can buy that Rolls Royce, but it's not going to fill the void. You can go out there and you can get the CEO position, but it's not going to fill the void. You can go out there and you can get the blonde, but it's not going to fill the void. And I'm just keeping it real today, right? Because that European vacation, that blonde, that car is just not going to feel what you need to feel in therapy. and you need to get help on, and you need to understand that that is not going to come about from external validation. You have to have build your own self-esteem.
Right.
What does overcompensation look like? Well, I'll tell you from a situation in my own family, where my own extended family, where I have a sister-in-law who did all her child's homework. He had issues, and she did all his homework, so he didn't graduate. But and she covered for him, right? And so she left a very dependent, angry young adult out there. But that's what overcompensations look like. Or if your husband left, or if a spouse left, and you overcompensate with material goods, right? You try to compensate with material things, and you buy the car for the 15-year-old who, okay, so someone said I'm at school every year to go to bat for my child, but she's not doing the work. I stopped this year. At some point, you know that it's just futile, right? You're knocking yourself up against the wall time and time again, and the child, for whatever reason, is not ready to make the change. So the one thing you could do is conserve your energy, right? You do want to protect them from getting kicked out of school. I mean, there's some things that you want to try to do, but ultimately, a child that's bent on just not doing anything at a particular time is going to do it. And they may even be more determined to do it because you're determined to keep them on track. That, in their teenage rebellion or their young adult rebellion, they're going to show you, right? I tapped out last year. Wow. And it's been so much better for my mental health. It just seems like this whole call is about, it's about our kids, but it's about how we realize that as sad as it is, we can't do it. And the damage that you're doing to yourself by continually knocking your head against the wall to try to change a child who's may not be ready for change. Or they're ready for change, but they need quiet to do it, right? They need you to stop pushing so they can stop pulling. And again, this is not about blaming anybody that's listening. This is just about taking stock of where you are, right? And what is the use of continuing to pull a 20-something year old who's not ready? And the one thing, the last thing I'll say about that, and we can, I want to go back to you, Kelly, is what you can do is again stop the overcompensation. Stop financing the cuckoo. Get, say, we're on a trajectory here, and I don't care if you give them a 2-year lead time, but it's like in the next year, I'd like to see this, this, and this, and I've been giving you $1,000, and I'm going to cut back on that in 2 years. I'm hoping that in that time, I will pay for your therapist, right? I'm hoping during that time, I'm not going to mention it anymore, but I hope during that time, you work on your mental health.
You know what? I love that idea. I was thinking about this, and I want to ask Jules, who just put up this comment, what this about this. But I was thinking, as Kyle's birthday approaches in August, he'll be 23, which is unbelievable, and putting some, some.
It is
It
unbelievable.
is right, but some guidelines or some thoughts, or I love how you said, I would love to see you do this within the next year, and I'm willing to do this for one more year, and then that's it. But Jules said, my son is in supported housing, and it's been the best thing because he has to adhere to their rules, not mine. How did you find supported housing, and what exactly is that? What does that mean exactly?
My son is not happy with me because when he was having a mental wellness breakdown, I actually called the 988 number. And I was able to get him taken to Sheppard Pratt. And I talked to them ahead of time and explained to them. And so they came out with plain clothes officers to come in and help him. And so he did not see it as such, but he did later on say that they treated him very well. And the fact was, I knew he couldn't come back to my home because I'm too weak. I'm just emotionally too weak to be able to support him. And then through the process of him being there, he had to comply with their request. And so, ironically, he's an ideal patient client with them. But with me, we were going through all kinds of challenges. And so, because he complied with whatever rules that they gave him, and I say whatever rules because he's 28, he's grown. And because he's grown, you don't, he did not sign for the first time for me to be able to know everything that's going on. And I was upset about that in the beginning, but then it's freeing because I'm like, you know what? You are grown. And you know what? I don't need to be losing sleep over this. And with the supportive housing, he's there. You have to take your medication. And once when he's medicated, he's a different person. It's easier to talk to him. And so he's there now. And now that he knows that coming home with me is not an option, he is complying to the rules with them. And so I didn't know about this before. So this is a lived experience, Linda and Kelly. Like, I didn't know, but it's working for him. And just for the record for the call, my son has a college degree. He has a bachelor's degree. He's already gone. So his issues ended up being bigger issues a little bit later, but I think it would be beneficial to the call in just being able to say, like, the fact that he has this housing and he has to take his medication and counseling is mandatory. And he's independent. I'm not involved in anything because he's grown. So I don't know if there's a different one with younger people, but this has been a lifesaver.
There are various, first of all, thank you for saying that. I've known you for a long time, and I'm so glad you made that point about your child having a degree, because people think that the degree is the Holy Grail. And I'm dealing with so many young men who, honestly, I've gotten them, and the parents have gotten them to the point where they could get the degree, but they still have to go in a workplace. They still have to get along with people. They still have to take their meds. They still need therapy. And so, like, what is happening is that because we are so good at this now, we get them to this point, but then they can't function on their first job, right? And
Oh,
that,
to
go
the
ahead.
point for the call. Linda and I've known each other for a long time. She tested all my kids, both of my sons, and we've worked. And to be clear, my son has a degree. My son did not start having a lot of these issues until after he got his degree. The challenge has been once he had to function in real world life, real world, and dealing with the microaggressions of life, that's when everything kind of went nuts. Because college he got, because that was still a continuance of a routine, and so the
In a
structure was
controlled
there.
environment
Exactly.
and strong maternal support. But I wanted you to I'm glad you made the point, because a lot of times people think, well, you can't even get them the degree, but the degree is not necessarily the finish line. Someone mentioned there's a program in Connecticut. There are a bunch of programs you can go, like I said, like Jules just said, be assisted through, Shepherd Pratt and some of the mental facilities in your area. Shepherd Pratt is in the DMV. They will refer you. I put one called College Living Experience, the dorm, or other programs that help. Your state might have programs, but they're in the hospitals themselves have school programs or internal programs where you go to an outside school as long as you adhere to their guidelines. So there are programs out there. Some of them are expensive, some of them take insurance, some of them are a combination of both insurance and you have to pay money. Someone has their hand up. If you could go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi, Dr. Linda. This is Medina Jett. I was the one who posted about my son in the program in Connecticut. And to the mom who said that her son is in this program, and so she doesn't have to, I guess, do anything, I struggled with whether I was overcompensating because even though my son was in the program, I felt like unless I was involved in holding the program folks accountable, he was just there going through the steps, but they weren't giving him the resources that he was supposed to get, such as giving him career counseling, coaching him on whether he wanted to go back to college or not, and what he wanted to do with his life, and helping him get his Social Security benefits and his EBT card and all those things. And so I was having like weekly, and then it became monthly calls with him, his therapist, his psychologist. And I was like, am I doing too much here? But I felt like until he learns to advocate for himself, I had to kind of coach him into how to advocate for himself in terms of what he should be getting and expecting to get.
Well, I mean, they have that process set up for the, so parents can participate, right? So I don't necessarily think in at least initially, and you've tapered off, so that seems to be a very healthy way of dealing with it. But just to make sure that there's a coherent treatment plan, the treatment plan is being adhered to, there's progress, right? I really think that that is, while at the same time, your child is in a place where that is not in your home, right? Which may be the healthiest. I mean, that seems to be a sort of a good path. But you're right. Eventually, that does have to result in the person or your son picking up more autonomy and independence. But he obviously needed assistance from someone other than you. Right? Does that make sense? Like, and I'm saying that in a gentlest way, but at times, because we're so close and they know how to pull and they know that we don't want to put them out on the street, that we're sometimes not the best person to deal with some of the mental health struggles.
Yeah, no, you're right. So yeah, it is a tapering, but I certainly felt like I was the helicopter mom still, but
Well,
trying to move away from that.
and I try to bring some lightness into this. Old habits die hard, right? And that's it's still your child, and you're guiding your child through a system. So I think leeway is appropriate there, but with just the thought that the whole goal is to put him on a path where he could, with assistance, do some things on his own.
Totally agree. Thank you.
So, Kelly, I want to kind of go back to you about this discussion, right? And how, what are your thoughts after we've had this discussion today, where parents have taken a similar role, where they're starting to understand that, maybe the best solution is for you to try to find systemic and institutional solutions.
Yeah, I think first, I really appreciate all the sharing and the great advice. That's the whole purpose of being in this space. And I don't think I'm there yet. And I think the difference is, what I heard this morning is a lot of the people that I think it was Jules, but who called 988. I believe the young her your son was in your home still, maybe, and maybe the other person as well. I'm not sure, but it feels different, at least still, because Kyle's not living with me. And so there's a distance and there's an opportunity for me to still, I think, give him some gentle coaching without taking over. So I think I'm not there yet, but I do think one of the pieces of advice around, giving some boundaries and saying, okay, I'm going to give you a year to do, like, this is what I Because he did say it a million times, what do you recommend? What would you do? What would you do? What would you do? And I told him what I would do. So I can go back and share again. Here's what I would do. Give him maybe, 3 things that he can do in terms of a plan and see if he does it. That's what I think. But it feels,
And I want to just say something, and again, these are sensitive topics. It is okay to feel relief that your child is not in the home with you.
Absolutely.
Gonna leave it there.
Yeah.
It is okay to go on with your life, even if your child is not doing as well as you would hope.
That's right.
It's okay for you to experience joy as a human.
Absolutely. So that's the space I'm choosing to be in, and then focusing on helping Chris as much as I can. Even though it's his life too, he's making choices that are very different than what I would make, but it's his life. So that's a whole nother journey, a whole nother conversation.
Right. And every child is different. Every child as a the commenter says, every child is different. Some might need scaffolding. Some might appear to be completely independent. And I say appear because sometimes our girls appear to be independent, but they need us too, callers. They need us too. Okay. Check in on them. Okay. Give them a call. I know you're doing great, but mom just wants to just say, how you really doing? Are you doing okay? But different children need different scaffolding. Different children need one of the things that I experienced as a clinician is that a lot of times the relationship between the parents and the child have eroded to such that the child is dealing with mental illness and substance abuse issues, and they're really stubborn. They will not take any advice. They're extremely defensive. One of the only ways to get around that sometimes is to have the parents let go a little bit so that they're not so defended. They're trying to prove to you that they're going to make it. They're going to try to prove, they're trying literally for your approval, even though it doesn't seem like it. They're trying to make themselves worthy of your love because they feel unworthy. So sometimes letting go of the control and getting out of the unhealthy patterns is healthy for them and is healthy for you.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anyone else that wants to comment or share this morning? We have a couple minutes left. Any other advice on the residential programs or some of these other places that are?
I actually have some information to share. I recently completed an 8-week course through NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and it was a course for peer-to-peer counseling because I was getting calls from a lot of other people about, for advice and how to deal with their particular child's mental challenges. But I found that through taking this course, I learned so much more about how to parent, how to lead conversations with my own child. And so I put that out there. Folks are members of NAMI. They have chapters in every city, but they're an amazing resource for parents. In addition to this open group, that class that I did had about 12 other parents from Atlanta, where I live. And it was just an amazing eye-opening experience. It comes with a huge handbook full of information and resources on not just what I'm dealing with bipolar with my son, but just a knowledge base of all the other mental challenges and how to deal with them and what the medications and treatment modalities are. And I just thought it was amazing. So I put that out there if anybody else is a member of NAMI or wants to join NAMI to get that info.
Thank you for that. I put the link in the chat as well. They're a fantastic organization. Really appreciate you sharing that. And I saw Dr. Linda look like you were about to say something.
Well, I want to say, well, first of all, Kelly's modest, and NAMI has actually honored her for the Sunrise Project and creation and of the dialogue around this particular segmentation of parents, right, who are dealing with substance abuse and mental health issues. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay. Well, thank you. But it's a fantastic organization, and it really is. So thank you for sharing that.
Parent education is everything, right? Gaining knowledge, and hopefully, you taking that training will help you to help so many other people that are in the same situation. And to spread through our community, just some mutual support. Again, this is the kind of parenting that's not in any book, that's not in any, and people are afraid and ashamed to talk about it. So bringing it out, I think, is supportive of not just your child, but of other children and other parents.
Absolutely. And they have great support groups as well, all different times of the day, sort of like Al-Anon or AA. Okay. Well, Dr. Linda, do you want to wrap up with a few closing words before we
Yes,
week?
I one of the things that I didn't talk about today is that I think getting your own support in the form of therapy, in the form of mentoring, in the form of going to NAMI classes, whatever it takes is really important. And one of the themes that are running through what everybody said today is that they got resources from other people. They talked to other people. They reached out when they were at their low point to try to get someone to help them. So, I'm really about parent empowerment this year. That's been the theme and parents' right to exist and to be happy despite all. So I would just urge people that need support to get your own therapy. You don't even have to talk about your child all the time. You could talk about your own triggers, your own situation growing up that leads you to this place. So get your own help in whatever form. I am not a therapy snob. It doesn't have to be therapists with a clinical psychologist. There are many ways to get help.
There are many ways to get help. That's the key. And Dr. Linda has been such a wonderful resource to us for almost 6 years now, and for me personally, for 22 years. And I know many of us on the call. So she is also available and has shared in the past. She's doing testing still and has recommended doing testing for our young people
Right.
as they get
And
older.
I'm also consulting with parents. Or just I may not even end up being the treater, but I consult with parents that are in sticky situations with colleges, with their child, the legal system, to try to help them to figure out what to do next, where to go, and to kind of like help them organize a team of support.
Right. And just a reminder for anybody that needs it, it's Dr. Linda at drlindamcgee.com, correct? That's your best email.
Exactly.
I put it in the chat.
Exactly.
Awesome. Dr. Linda at Dr. L M L, Dr. L McGee.com.
Yeah, right. Right.
Okay. Dr. L McGee.com.
Thank
So
you.
thank you, Dr. Linda, for being here and for doing this every month. And for being such an advocate for Sunrise and all of us all these years. And we're right at time, so I want to turn it over to Dr. Vicky, who will close us out today.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Dr. Linda, again. I love the first Sundays of every month. God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this community called the Sunrise Project, for every parent that is represented, every household that is represented. We thank you today for Kelly and Dee and Dr. Linda and for their commitment and consistency to creating safe and sacred space for us as parents to come together to provide support to one another. Now, bless us as we go further into this day, into this week. Bless our children. God, give us courage to be able to let go in places that would allow them to grow, to become the adults that you created them to be. We trust you with all of our heart. And we try so hard not to lean to our own understanding and all of our ways. We commit to acknowledging you because you promised to direct our paths. We thank you again. We bless you. And we look forward to coming again together on next Sunday. In your name, we do pray and give thanks. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Dr. Vicky. I appreciate you. and everybody for being here and all the amazing shares today and input and advice and, the sisterhood and the brotherhood. I see some men on here as well. So thank you for everything. Thank you for the support. Thank you, Dr. Linda, Dr. Vicky D. And we'll be back next Sunday, same time. Have a great day, everyone.